Severance starts now. Best TV show in town. Mark is hot, Ellie's hot, Irv is hot, Gemma's hot, Dylan's hot, Milkshake's hot. They're all really hot.
Well, hello everyone. I am Mark C., and it is my pleasure to welcome our next guest to the Go See Talk podcast experience. We wish to welcome and thank Teddy S. for joining us. I will make these statements freely. The board is not involved in this call, so I can make this statement. We love Teddy's music. My Audi enjoys each of his themes equally, and it's because of our affection for his output. A high five is available upon request. We've been looking at his file, and he is just the most amazing person that we've ever spoken to. His output is beyond belief, and we're thrilled to be rejoining him. Praise Kier and all that. So Teddy, it's been a while. How are things in your world?
Things are really good, Mark. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, really happy to be talking to you.
I got so much out of our last phone call, that's how long ago it was. We were doing smoke signals or something
that.
But you know, you've come a long way since doing some music for the state with a very limited palette of sample music. And you once told me back then, you said your experience is about gaining experience and finding the ability to know what's right and what's wrong. So I guess at this point in your career with the multitude of movies and hit TV shows, do you kind of know what you're doing, or is it still kind of trial by fire and scary every step of the way?
I don't know that it's scary, but it definitely, I go into every project with some amount of uncertainty about what's going to work and, you know, and basically just relying on my intuition to tell me what to do. But, you know, sometimes I really think that I've got, you know, I think I've got the right approach. And then when I see it to picture, it's not right, or the picture is different than what I imagined it was going to be. But generally speaking, you know, I have a saying or a mantra that the picture tells you what to do. And, that's really true. I trust my intuition that when I'm looking at the screen and hearing the music and it feels right to me, then it's right.
Well, you know, there's a couple things I want to know specifically about the main theme. You've got some root notes which kind of lay under the rest of the themes, and then you kind of seesaw back and forth between consonants and dissonance. And I guess, you know, that seesawing, in my opinion, is perfect for the show, being innie and outie. And was that instinct, you know, am I reaching too far? Did you get really geeky and try to, you know, make a correlation between characters and music? Or, you know, was the show able to give you that canvas?
Honestly, no, it was not intentional. But look, who knows why your intuition tells you to do certain things. You know, I think that without a doubt, the alternations between consonants and dissonance that make up those four chords somehow speak to the, you know, to the mystery and the puzzle of the landscape of the show. And, you know, sometimes you do things not, you know, intentionally, but you have some sort of intuition in your gut that is leading you to make choices that make sense for, you know, for the particular film or TV show. And, you know, in this case, it just seems to, it seems to speak to the tone of the show, the puzzle aspect of it. And yeah, I mean, I think that there is something to this idea of innie and outie with the consonants and dissonance.
But talk to me about the logistics. You know, the one thing I want to know is, this is getting very geeky. What is that static noise at the end? How is that achieved?
So that is, that's a reversed piano note. So it's a single piano note, which I have reversed the audio file. So instead of going peaking when you hit the note as a regular piano would do, this starts very softly and then builds to a cutoff. So it is that, and then while the sound is rising to its conclusion, I start taking little tiny snips out of the audio file. I just randomly chop up the audio file so that it starts to break up and become glitchy. And at the same time, I'm adding distortion as the sound is peaking. So all of those things together are what make that sound.
Which is a really nice signpost for or a watermark for the show, showing how much creativity and how much, I guess, say how much fun you had. Because and now that you mentioned the cuts between the notes, I could see how that almost gives like a stutter step to it, and it's just a very,
Exactly.
really
Yeah,
awesome.
it's good. I mean, you know, the idea behind the sound was, you know, the idea of the fraying of the self, and you know, so much of what happens in the show is underlining this idea of the first words of the series, "Who are you?" and you know, having that sense of identity become frayed. And so that was what my plan was, and as it turned out, that ended up being a really useful thing, not just in the theme, but in the fabric of the score as well.
Well, you know, maybe talk to me about some of the other elements that you find as season one advances to season two. Things get weirder. You get a drum line, you get some goat farmers, and you're like, what? But you have the ability to now warp things. You know, you're talking about a dark hallway and, you know, some deaths and some nefarious lumen activities. Like, how far could you go, and what did you know, find the most joy in tweaking it so it was more abstract?
It was really fun to approach a second season, and so I, you know, I wanted to take the foundation from season one and just kind of build on it, like as though season one was the trunk of a tree, and I wanted to start growing branches off of it. So, you know, I started writing new variations on the theme. So new melodic variations, new harmonic variations, you know, like it's the four chords, but then the four chords, instead of looping back, they go somewhere else. And then, you know, I did another thing with one of my key collaborators, Chris Lane, who's a sound designer whose work is heavily represented in the score. And we thought that in season two, we could really lean into the piano as the source of sounds. And so he made all of these sounds and loops out of just a single piano that's in our studio here. And that ended up, you know, he made sounds that are just like hitting the piano, but the way that he's processed it sounds like a drum. So some of those kind of woody sounds became really useful in episode four in the forest. And he just made all of these unique sounds that expanded on the language of the first season. And so there were all these great story opportunities to lean into. Particularly, you know, with the Ortbo in episode four, the forest kind of suggested a new tonal landscape for the show. Miss Cobell's episode eight, you know, where in Salt's Neck felt like it needed to have its own kind of instrumentation and language. And so, you know, I just used the elements of the story to guide the direction of where I wanted the music to go.
Well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned the sort of manipulated piano sounds, because one of the things in specifically in a track like Morning Routine, I couldn't tell if I was hearing like a triangle or ceramic bowls. And so was this actually, you know, a tangible instrument, or was this a manipulated piano like you mentioned?
Yeah, that's a good question, because that's an element of the instrumentation in this show that I don't really talk about that much because people don't ask about it. But that's a modular synthesizer, and what that particular instrument does really well is create percussion sounds where you sort of can't tell if it's electronic or acoustic. And so so that sound that you're referring to in Morning Routine, which sounds like a triangle, is actually this synth, but it has this very, very alive and acoustic quality to it. And that particular module that makes those sounds is really represented throughout both seasons of the show.
I'm glad I asked, and because of the smile you gave me, I'm even happier I asked. So, well, then let's talk about something else because, there's in musical theory, a resolve is important to sort of take you, back in the circle. But, and the reason I bring that up, I was watching either it was a Rick Beato video or someone else who was trying to dissect your music on the show, and they talk about how something resolves, and I thought, wouldn't it be perfect that the opposite of a resolve is what you want for the show, which is coming apart and fraying? So again, more of the mindset and kind of getting into the weeds on this, what how does that approach help you, or do you take that approach?
Well, for sure. I mean, I think that, like, as just as one example of that issue, a lot of times the way that you end a cue is important, and a lot of times not resolving the music harmonically at the end of a cue is the correct thing to do to bring the viewer into the next scene. Like if your cue ends and it sounds like totally resolved, this is something that sometimes, like, I notice that maybe a less experienced composer would do, is just always have an ending to the cue where it feels like, oh, okay, we're done. And a lot of times, what I strive for is to really deliver the viewer into the next scene. So that might, first of all, start with ending the cue instead of on a resolved chord, but ending it on an unresolved chord, and then having the music trail out rather than come to a firm conclusion.
Okay. I think that makes wonderful sense. And if anybody knows their business in this game, it's Teddy S. So, speaking specifically about, again, your approach, I have to know kind of whether it's an industry standard or just your take on it. I kind of get the idea that, or maybe people like to think that a TV show is one long movie when really you kind of take these things maybe siloed, and you have to hit it, episode at a time. And speaking more to the resolve, is there a long game played to the point where you want the very last episode to round out things that you've been working on, or do you kind of treat each episode like it's, like a Bond movie, self-contained?
We do sometimes think about and talk about sort of large scale planning, particularly, if it's a new theme for a character. There have been situations where Ben has said, like, I don't think we're ready for that moment here, but maybe down the road that might be a good idea to explore. So there is some of that. I do approach every episode as a self-contained thing, because each episode is a film in and of itself. But for sure, as I'm getting to the final episodes, I do start thinking about, how can we make the music feel like it has reached its conclusion of just this overall arc. And so, I felt like in episode 10, in particular, you have a couple of cues. The cue that accompanies Dylan's reading the letter that his outie has sent to him, that feels like the culmination of a theme that started in episode 1 of season 2. There's a Mark Helly cue that happens as they're approaching the Mark finishing the Cold Harbor file. That's also the culmination of something that started in season 1. So there are these ways in which I do try to think about the large scale at the end. I wouldn't say that I devise it from the beginning, knowing that it's what's going to happen at the end. But when I get to the end, I start to sort of reflect on everything that's come before and start thinking about what might be an opportunity to sort of close out a thought that began in the beginning of the season.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's satisfying to the listener. So I would imagine as the creative or getting to oversee this put together, having an A to Z approach to it might, if it works out, it works out and it makes everybody feel good. But you know what? I want to know what makes Teddy feel good. Specifically, there's a track, Three's a Crowd, where it has like this, and I'm going to say this gently, it has a Vangelis atmosphere, which it doesn't mean like you're copying Vangelis, but it has that cool and airy vibe. So are there things that you've been, waiting to do, or, like you said, you have to respond to what the picture asks for, but are there things like I've always wanted to use a bouzouki and tune it down, and now's my chance,
Well, let's see. The thing that comes to mind when you ask me that question is that I have this amazing instrument here, called an onde martineau, which is this cool electronic instrument, and it sounds a little bit like a theremin,
Okay.
a little different, but same idea, sliding pitches and things like that. And I actually used it to play Miss Huang's theremin music at the campfire in episode 4. But that is something that I would really like even more opportunities to use. It's a very specific sound. It's not appropriate for everything. I need to get better at playing it. But I do have a goal to improve my skills and then find a really good opportunity to feature it.
I can just imagine, there's this mad mathematician in your brain with a pipe, just sitting there watching the dailies, watching the assembly cut, and just all of a sudden he goes, "It's time."
It's time. Yeah, exactly.
Well, talk to me about things that you like, again, more of your style, your flair, things that make you feel good, so that we, the listener, make our ears feel good. Trains Running. I'm pretty sure everyone who's talked to you about this second season has brought that up. But there's just something so melancholically beautiful. I just don't know how you create that and not just break down as you're writing it,
It's incredible. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I'm getting chills just thinking about that scene. That was a scene that it felt like it needed something that had the quality of a song. And it didn't want to literally be a song with a vocal, but it needed to sort of feel like an aria, for Irving and Dylan in that moment. And so it was really nice. I mean, it's a one-off. That's a theme that doesn't occur elsewhere in the show, and that was by design. I wanted it to be just this moment of breaking out into a melody, that was really beautiful and self-contained.
Well, I love that idea because that makes it not only specific and unique, and people are more likely to pick up and take note of it. But are there times where maybe you don't know what to do, or Ben or the producers don't know what to do, and you're like, well, instead of trying to go beat for beat for beat, like Mickey Mousing it, which I know that's a no-no, is there a time where you just say, hey, why don't we just step back, very little, one or two piano keys, and there's such beauty in the minutiae or the minimalism.
Well, I think you just described the approach to the entire show.
Okay.
I mean that's we're really never Mickey Mousing in this show, and from the beginning, I think Ben was really focused on having spare and minimal music. And I do a lot of writing before they start shooting. With both seasons, I did a lot of that. And some of the things that I do, I dare myself to just be as simple and minimalist as possible. And a lot of times, those things that sort of feel like they're on the edge of just being too simple, really end up being very helpful and important. That is the kind of music that this show, in a lot of cases, wants, that the picture wants. There's so much happening in the frame, and a lot of times the music just needs a couple of well-chosen notes rather than a lot of them.
Well, I have to say, of the TV shows that I watch and what's currently playing in my mind rent-free, it's your music and David Buckley's The Sandman. And I find something so like competent and sophisticated just about how, you can do a couple of those notes and there's really no shame in, if you wanted to, playing those notes throughout the entirety of the scene or the show. They just work so well. And I feel that once you've got that code figured out, you
Yeah.
could play it once or 1,000 times. And I'd like to think that the experience would still be the same. So.
Yeah. I mean that's interesting. Yeah. I mean there is something about just the DNA of those four chords that it feels like as long as you're not being overly literal about repetition, there is material there that feels like it wants to be repeated, and like it can just float over the scenes, and it carries some aspect of what the tone of the show is.
Well, now that you get to step back, I hope that you get to see this as a consumer, as a fan, and not have to, scratch your head and say, why didn't we do this or that? But what I find amazing about the internet and social media is that once something takes on, the public culture and consciousness grabs onto it, they have so much fun with it to where,
I
I'm
know.
not even talking about cosplay, but like the fact that someone made an intro song to your intro. I'm sure you've heard of that.
I
And
have.
just, it's so clever and cute. And then Apple, like, they did it themselves. I thought that was amazing.
From Miss Cobell, here she comes. There's her face, shining light all over the freaking place. Quiet, Paul. Time to go. Let's lock it. It's directed by Ben Stiller.
It's really cool and inspiring, and I've been entertained by it, that the version with the lyrics, it lives in my head. I can't really hear the theme anymore without hearing those lyrics. So I'm really grateful for the dialogue.
Well, they did leave out one. They left out Teddy's hot, which
Thank you. Too kind.
I'm sure we could do. We could work some magic. We'll get you shoved in there. So.
Okay, great, great, amazing.
Well, this has been amazing fun catching up. Congratulations on all the well-earned success. And I think that the sky's got to be the limit. But if you could let us know what you're working on next so we can be able to prepare for that, are you to let anything out of the bag?
Yeah, well, I am I just finished up The Housemaid with Sydney Sweeney and Amanda Seyfried. It comes out at Christmas. It's a lot of fun.
Excellent. Well, let me ask you, sorry, just one more question.
Yeah, sure.
The idea of helping the project grow based on your contributions. I read somewhere that having written the music before the assembly and the shooting and stuff like that, do they really play your music on set to put the actors in the mode of the show?
They do.
Okay.
Yeah, I've seen evidence of it.
Okay.
No, it's great, and it's amazing. As a composer, you are so often at the end of the chain of creative acts. Sometimes you get the picture. You haven't had any opportunity to have your work affect production, and so to start early the way that I do, so that it can affect the director's vision of the project, and maybe even the actor's, sense of the tone of the project. That's really cool, and it really feels nice to, you react in so many ways to the work that actors do, to the work that the director does, and it's so nice to be able to provide inspiration for people in that process as well. So I love it.
Well, I can't imagine how the show would fare without that. Well, everyone, thank Teddy for his time. Digital hugs, high fives are available on request. Severance Season 1 and Season 2 is on Apple Plus, and you can get the soundtrack on Bandcamp and plenty of other platforms. Teddy, you've been amazing. Can't wait to see you again.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it.
Take care, everybody. See you next time.